Vamshah. Family. Panchaleshu. In the land of Panchala. Samedhitaha. Greatly increased. Translation. Of these many sons, each produced hundreds and hundreds of grandsons. In this way, the whole city of Panchala became overcrowded by these sons and grandsons of King Puranjana. I say after me, of these many sons, each produced hundreds and hundreds of grandsons. In this way, the whole city of Panchala became overcrowded by these sons and grandsons of King Puranjana. Srila Prabhupada's purport. We must remember that Puranjana is the living entity and the city, Panchala, is the body. The body is the field of activity for the living entity, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Kshetra, Kshetrajna. There are two constituents. One is the living entity, Kshetrajna, and the other is the body of the living entity, Kshetra. Any living entity can know that he is covered by the body if he only contemplates the body a little bit. Just with a little contemplation, he can come to understand that the body is his possession. One can understand this by practical experience and by the authority of the Shastras. In Bhagavad Gita 2.13, it is said, Dehinosminyata dehe. The proprietor of the body, the soul, is within the body. The body is taken as panchaladesh, or the field of activities wherein the living entity can enjoy the senses in their relationship to the five sense objects, namely gandha, rasa, rupa, sparsha, and shabda, that is, sense objects made out of earth, water, fire, air, and sky. Within this material world, covered by the material body of subtle and gross matter, every living entity creates actions and reactions which are herein known allegorically as sons and grandsons. There are two kinds of actions and reactions, namely pious and impious. In this way, our material existence becomes coated by different actions and reactions. In this regard, Srila Narottama Das Thakur states, Karma Kanda Jnana Kanda Kevala Vishirbhanda Amrita Balya Yeva Kaya Nana Yoni Sarapire Gadariya Bhakshana Harikare Tare Janma Adapate Yaya. Fruit of activities and mental speculation are simply cups of poison. Whoever drinks of them, thinking them to be nectar, must struggle very hard, life after life, in different types of bodies. Such a person eats all kinds of nonsense and becomes condemned by his activities of so-called sense enjoyment. Thus, the field of action and reactions by which one's descendants are increased begins with sex life. Puranjana increased his whole family by begetting sons who in their turn begot grandsons. Thus the living entity, being inclined toward sexual gratification, becomes involved in many hundreds and thousands of actions and reactions. In this way, he remains within the material world simply for the purpose of sense gratification and transmigrates from one body to another. His process of reproducing so many sons and grandsons results in so-called societies, nations, communities, and so on. All these communities, societies, dynasties, and nations simply expand from sex life. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj in Maitunadi Grihamedi Sukamitucham, Bhagavatam 7.9.45, a Grihamedi is one who wants to remain within this material existence. This means he wants to remain within this body or society and enjoy friendship, love, and community. His only enjoyment is increasing the number of sex enjoyers. He enjoys sex and produces children, who in their turn marry and produce grandchildren. The grandchildren also marry and in their turn produce great-grandchildren. In this way, the entire earth becomes overpopulated, and then suddenly there are reactions provoked by material nature in the form of war, famine, pestilence, earthquakes, etc. Thus, the entire population is again extinguished, simply to be recreated. This process is explained in Bhagavad Gita 8.19 as repeated creation and annihilation, bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. Due to a lack of Krishna consciousness, all this creation and annihilation is going on under the name of human civilization. The cycle continues due to man's lack of knowledge of the soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the translation again. Of these many sons, each produced hundreds and hundreds of grandsons. In this way, the whole city of Panchala became overcrowded by these sons and grandsons of King Puranjana. So Prabhupada reminds us at the outset that we had to remember this is an allegory. The allegory of Puranjana. So he represents the living entity, the soul, and the city, Panchala, is the body. So there are these two things, the soul and the body. And this is described in the Bhagavad Gita. The body is called the Kshetra, or the field. And the Kshetra-gya of the soul is the knower of the field. Kshetra and Kshetra-gya. This is the situation. Puranjana and the and his city. So the problem is, of course, is that here is describing his process of becoming entangled. So there are two things, but people don't know. This is ignorance. And so Prabhupada says here, any living entity can know that he is covered by the body if he only contemplates the body a little bit. So this meditation can take place. It's actually self-evident. I am the seer, the Kshetrajna, the knower of the field, is the seer. And he sees besides himself all other things. There's a distinction between the seer and that which is seen. Here's my body, but I am a witness of my body. I see my hands, my legs, and so on. That's one thing, but I am the seer. I'm something else because of this distinction between the seer and the seen. So you can contemplate in this way. You can see that you're different from your body. You're the seer. And through this body, the sense organs that we have, we are able to, first of all, of course, we know we're not the environment on the outside that's different from us. These things are mentioned here, gandha, rasa, rupa, sparsha, shabda, smell, odor, flavors, form, sparsha, tact, touch, tactile sensations, and the sound. These are coming from the environment. So they come to us through the sense organs that our body's equipped with. But not only are we conscious of Gandha, Rasa, Rupa, Sparsha, and Shabda, but we're also conscious of the very sense organs that pick them up. Now I can, my eyes can move and my tongue can move and things like that. So now I'm different not only from the sense objects, but I'm also different from the senses. And this body is simply made up of senses. So I'm one thing, and this gross matter that I'm encaged in, that's different from me. I'm the witness. And I can also witness the operations of my own mind. So we can gradually come to see by observation that the seer is one thing who sees besides himself his gross and his subtle matter working. Now, who is the seer? That's the self. That's me. And I am not, I am different from this body, this gross body and this subtle body. The two things, the seer and the seen. And the second thing I should know is that as the seer, this body is given to me, just as the environment is presented to me, this body is presented to me, and the whole thing is working outside of my control. Now, to some extent, I try to manipulate it, but it's going on. How is this body being maintained? How is it that when the food goes to the stomach, it gets digested, energy gets distributed everywhere? But it's working. This body is working. It's going to sleep and it's waking up and it's acquiring food. And it's going here and it's going there. It has these desires that are satisfied. Everything is going on. It's actually by some higher agent that's controlling all these things. So this way we can understand that we are kind of going for a ride on this vehicle of material nature, which is being controlled by the higher power. So this we have to understand. Prabhupada says two ways. First of all, one can understand this by practical experience, that the body is our possession. It is my body. And the possessor is one thing, and that which he possesses is something else again. So this way, my body, the possessor and the possessed, or the seer and the seen. So we can understand this simply by a little introspective contemplation. And then we can also go on to understand from Shastra, Dehi no sminyata dehe. There's the bodied and there's the embodied soul. And the difference is that the soul remains the same while the body is changing. Now, Lord Krishna has described this. So either way you take it, by experience or Shastra, it's there. There's the soul and there's the body. And they are two different things. But what happens is this being in the material body is a huge misfortune for a spirit soul. Because under illusion, engages in so many fruitive activities trying to enjoy this body. And what this verse is telling us today is this process of enjoyment is treacherous and deceptive. This warning is there all over the place. It's the whole point of a great deal of the point of spiritual life is to understand that if you want spiritual advancement, then you have to sacrifice sense gratification, and that if you want sense gratification, you sacrifice spiritual advancement. The two don't go together. And that sense gratification is a disaster for the well, for our well-being. Because once there is sense gratification, and here beginning with sex life, the allegory uses sex in copulation as the example, one becomes so much entangled. So there are, in the allegory, these sons are his material actions and grandsons the reactions. So as soon as one begins to act on the material platform and engage in material life centered around sex indulgence, immediately the materialistic actions start to proliferate, and there are also the reactions, because one is bound up in a network of causality, and every material action we perform has a reaction that comes back on us. This is karma. And they just go on and on and on and on. We get the reaction, and then to respond to that reaction, we act again, and then there are more reactions, and there's more reactions, and the next thing we know, we're completely trapped. We get more and more entangled. Prahlad Maharaj has used the example like silkworms wrapped up in the cocoon of their own making. So our material activities trap us in this cocoon. And causes us immense suffering. Bhutva paliyate. It's a series of devastations. The sum total of this reaction, actions and reactions, is there's devastations. That's already the difference. The wise know this, that a spirit is eternal and unchanging, and matter is temporary and changing. And that's stated in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. They know this difference. There are two kinds of things, two kinds of substances. There's matter and there's spirit. And their generic qualities are, what is spirit is eternal. It doesn't come into being and it doesn't go out of being, and it doesn't go through changes or alterations of state. And then there's matter, which comes into being and goes out of being, material things. And there's always subject to change and vicissitude. So matter means devastation. Whatever's put together, it falls apart. And so the embodied soul, identifying himself as matter, has to endure these things, and this is suffering. So here, Narottama Das Thakur warns that anything other than Krishna consciousness, although it may look like believing it to be nectar, amrita, it's poison. So it looks good, it tastes good, it's candy-coated arsenic. Sense gratification is like that. It's like those people who take trick-or-treat candy, and they put a stick of, you know, a lollipop, and they shoot it up with strychnine or something. And it's a trick, but it's a trick. A nice shiny apple with the razor blades inside. Well, in every apple of sense gratification, there's a razor blade. You think you can be like the mouse, you know, it's going to get the cheese from the trap and not get snapped. But it's like playing Russian roulette. So there would be the reaction always comes. So this warning is there. Also in the Bhagavad Gita, those pleasures, samsparshaja bhoga, that arise, those enjoyments which arise from the contact, sparsha, samsparsha, between the senses and their objects, those pleasures, dukkha yonaya, they are the source of all suffering. This is different from what the commercials say on the television and the radio. This is different from what the whole world is on this track of thinking. Yes, by this friction between the senses and the objects, that's happiness. All happiness comes from that. And of course, especially that friction that derives from copulation, that's the essence of all pleasure. He says, no, it's dukkha yonaya. It's the source of all misery. And Krishna says, adiantavanta. These pleasures have an adi and an anta. They have a beginning and an end. And those who are Buddha, wise, naramante teshu, they don't delight in these things. So if we are wise, if we're actually Buddha, so many people you meet on the street, I see once on Sankirtan, it was used to be a common experience to see some guy walking along with his arm around a girl, try to give him a magazine. He says, "No, I'm a Buddhist." Well, he's not wise anyway, because he's got his arm around dukkha yonaya, you know, source of all misery, but he thinks it's pleasure. You want to be a Buddhist, actually follow Buddha. Look how much renounced he shows. But people, they advertise, "I'm the follower of Buddha," but they don't renounce. They're not wise. That's the word Buddha, comes from the same word. Those who are wise, those who are Buddha, they don't delight in these material pleasures with their beginning and end, because they just hand you over to suffering in the material world. Material pleasures force us, when there's material pleasure, the soul forgets his identity and identifies himself falsely with the material body. And thus, thinking he's the body, trying to get pleasure from the body, he gets involved in all these reactions, and just gets carried along helplessly. And his life becomes frantic, a mad scramble to survival. And he doesn't survive. The survival rate is zero. They have a 100% mortality rate. Everyone's struggling hard to make it. And every funeral is a failure. They don't make it. And it's a hopeless enterprise. So if everybody's been going on trying to find happiness through sense gratification in this world, but it's an historic failure. It hasn't happened. But the illusion is so great that everyone thinks, "Well, I'm going to do it. Yeah, I see my parents. They embarked, these sex enjoyers. And I look at them now, all bitter and unhappy and sad. But I'm not going to be like them." And then your parents are going to look at you and they can say, "Well, I'm not going to be like them. I'm not going to make the same mistakes." But somehow or other, it keeps going on. So it's a useless enterprise. And those who are intelligent understand this. So one has to avoid this temptation. Prahlad Maharaj warns in this verse called, "Yanmaya tunadi grihamedi sukkam hitucham." This happiness of the materialistic people, the Grihamedis, Maitunadi, which starts with this happiness derived from copulation and its byproducts, Maitunadi, it's Tuchcham, he says, it's insignificant. It's like this, it's this happiness, it's a scratching of an itch. And to enjoy this happening, they're handed over into horrible sufferings in this material world. Horrible sufferings in this material world. Repeated birth and death, undergoing all kinds of tribulations, devastations, and so on. All just for this sukkam. And actually all you enjoy, he calls it his manasijam, you enjoy a little mental satisfaction. All the pleasure you actually get are mental concoctions. My wife is very nice. My children went to Yale. That kind of thing. A little mental. This is a pretty house. It's at a good address. My brother isn't as rich as I am. These are the pleasures that one derives, little mental satisfaction, and then it's all over. So one should become dira, he says, sober, and avoid these things. If you're actually sober, you'll not get intoxicated. And so when material nature hands out that jeweled cup of sense gratification, you'll understand. It may look good, but it's poison. and the reaction is there. So that's what we're being warned here. As Puranjana gets so entangled, so he fills the city with his children. So then there's the reaction. His actions and then the reactions accumulate, and there's devastation. It's like you get a city that's overcrowded with people, it gets very unsanitary, and there's rats, and then there's some plague or some fire or some kind of devastation arises to neutralize things. This is the way things go. There are these reactions in material nature that go on like this. Here I read a little description by Prahlad Maharaj earlier, where he's talking to his demoniac schoolmates. He's describing this attachment. He says, "What person too attached to household life, due to being unable to control his senses, can liberate himself?" That's the thing, when the senses are uncontrolled, there's no prospect for liberation. The whole effort of liberation begins with sense control. An attached householder is bound very strongly by ropes of affection for his family, wife, children, and other relatives. And Prabhupada says in the purport, he says, "If one prefers to remain in the dark well of household life because of uncontrolled senses, he becomes increasingly entangled by ropes of affection for his wife, children, servants, house, money, and so on. Such a person cannot attain liberation from material bondage. To return home back to Godhead, one must be completely free from material attachment. Therefore, bhakti yoga means vairagya vidya, the art that can help one develop a distaste for material enjoyment." That's called vairagya vidya, the knowledge of vairagya, renunciation. Anyway, it goes on. "Money is so dear that one conceives of money as being sweeter than honey. Therefore, who can give up the desire to accumulate money, especially in household life? Thieves, professional servants, soldiers, and merchants try to acquire money even by risking their very dear lives." There's a fact. People, money is so important to people that they're willing to risk giving, they hold their lives very dear, but they're even to put that at risk in order to get money. I mean, preferably you'd like to risk somebody else's life, but if it comes down to it, people put their own lives on the line just for some money. So that's how much, once you get attached to money. Why is money important? Because without money you cannot have sense gratification. That's the way it works. At least not for very long. You always got to pay for it across the counter. So people, therefore, they need money. And then money, you have to do so many things. And then in order to get money, if you really want it badly enough, you'll risk your life and you'll commit all kinds of crimes. If you really want it, then you start to cheat and commit crimes. And then then sinful activities are there. Once the desire of money is so strong, you'll give up anything. So commit so many sinful activities in order to get money, and then you suffer the reaction for those. Things get worse and worse. So Prahlad Maharaj goes on. "How can a person who is most affectionate to his family, the core of his heart being always filled with their pictures, give up their association? Specifically, a wife is always very kind and sympathetic and always pleases her husband in a solitary place. Who could give up the association of such a dear and affectionate wife? Small children talk in broken language, very pleasing to hear, and their affectionate father always thinks of their sweet words. How could he give up their association? One's elderly parents and one's sons and daughters are also very dear. A daughter is especially dear to her father. And while living at her husband's house, she is always in his mind. Who could give up that association? Aside from this and household affairs, there are many decorated items of household furniture. And there are also animals and servants. Who could give up such comforts? The attached householder is like a silkworm, which weaves a cocoon in which it becomes imprisoned, unable to get out. Simply sat for the satisfaction of two important senses, the genitals and the tongue, one is bound by material conditions. How can one escape? Prabhupada says, a man becomes increasingly entangled in household affairs, so much so that leaving them becomes almost impossible. Thus the household becomes griham andakupam, a dark well into which the man has fallen. That means like a in India, there's always a danger. There are old abandoned wells. You're walking along at night. Maybe it has somebody put a cover on the top and the vines overgrew it and the cover rotted, so you go right down. And then you can't get out. Nighttime, nobody hears your screams. For such a man to get out is extremely difficult unless he is held by a strong person, the spiritual master who helps the fallen person with a strong rope of spiritual instruction. A fallen person should take advantage of this rope, and then the spiritual master or the supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna, will take him out of the dark well. Anyway, Prahlad continues. One who is too attached cannot understand that he is wasting his valuable life for the maintenance of his family. He also fails to understand that the purpose of human life, a life suitable for realization of the absolute truth, is being imperceptibly spoiled. However, he is very cleverly attentive to see that not a single farthing is lost by mismanagement. Thus, although an attached person in material existence always suffers from the threefold miseries, he does not develop a distaste for the way of material existence. If a person too attached to the duties of family maintenance is unable to control his senses, the core of his heart is immersed in how to accumulate money. Although he knows that one who takes the wealth of others will be punished by the law of the government and by the laws of Yamaraj after death, he continues cheating others to acquire money. Oh, my friends, sons of demons, in this material world, even those who are apparently advanced in education have the propensity to consider this is mine and that is for others. Thus they are always engaged in providing the necessities of life to their families in a limited concept of family life, just like uneducated cats and dogs. They are unable to take to spiritual knowledge. Instead, they are bewildered and overcome by ignorance. My dear friends, O sons of the demons, it is certain that no one bereft of knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been able to liberate himself from material bondage at any time or in any country. Rather, those bereft of knowledge of the Lord are bound by the material laws. They are factually addicted to sense gratification, and their target is women. Indeed, they are actually playthings in the hands of attractive women. Victimized by such a conception of life, they become surrounded by children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and thus they are shackled up to material bondage. Those who are very much addicted to this conception of life are called demons. Therefore, although you are the sons of demons, keep aloof from such persons and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan, the origin of all the demigods, because the ultimate goal for the devotees of Narayan is liberation from the bondage of material existence. Well, that's his plea to his schoolmates, philosophy. So there's a description of how one becomes entangled in material life, starting with maituna, copulation, and then everything expands from there on and on and on and on. So that certainly is, there's some little bit of pleasure. It's described in Bhagavatam that Krishna made sex pleasurable, because otherwise the hassles and the hardships of taking care and raising children are so overwhelming that if there were not some little compensation, nobody would undertake it. So that's the so there's some little bit of pleasure, and for that people become completely mad and addicted, and then they become bewildered, covered by false ego, and then they suffer again and again and again. This lust for material enjoyment, so it leads just to suffering, and that we have to become convinced of. We have to have the strength of mind to understand that material enjoyment is not enjoyment, that it always leads us to suffering, and that although spiritual life may seem like sense deprivation, it may seem very difficult at first. It's not. And when one practices spiritual life with some kind of regulation and regularity, then very soon one's original Krishna consciousness starts to become uncovered. And one realizes that by performing the austerities of Krishna consciousness, one enjoys real happiness. That is when the vairagya vidya, one develops a taste for austerity. Why should I develop a taste for rising in the darkness of the wee hours in the morning, or taking a cold shower, or working until my feet ache and whatever? Why should I do that? Because I like pain? No. But because by undergoing this austerity, Krishna consciousness develops. One sees that the more sense gratification I give up and the more renounced I become, the more my Krishna consciousness develops. So what you develop a taste for. So what happens is the Krishna consciousness, and therefore one welcomes austerity. Because I could see that from this austerity comes Krishna consciousness. So although from a material point of view it looks very bleak, from the spiritual point of view it's wonderful. Because this brings Krishna consciousness. And similarly, one who's in this situation, when one sees the prospect of some sense gratification, immediately you can see associated with the suffering that goes with material life and say, "Phew, I don't want it." So that's a spiritual person. What he may do, what he may like, or we may dislike, it will be just opposite from a materialist. A spiritual person will have... will not be attracted by the face of a beautiful woman. He'll immediately see, associate this, oh, so much suffering is there immediately. And when given the prospect of some austerity, say, oh yes, this is wonderful. And go, why is that? Is it crazy that people should reject pleasure and embrace pain? No. But they know what pleasure is. They know what pain is. They also, everybody is there. They're seeking pleasure. Everyone's pleasure-seeking entity, happiness-seeking entity. Anandamaya vyasat, the living entity is made of ananda, it's bliss. So it is not that the spiritual people differ from material people in principle. Everyone's seeking happiness. But the fact of the matter is that on the material platform there is no happiness, it's just disaster. 100% disaster area. Like the fires that sweep through California, nobody can put out those fires. Earthquakes, this is always going on. So the thing is to get out of this disaster area. So the real happiness is on the spiritual platform. And when one enjoys that spiritual happiness, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter, he says, upon gaining this, he knows there is no greater gain, and is not shaken even in the midst of greatest difficulty. See, in the material world, we make different material arrangements. Our happiness depends on circumstances. But I have to have this house and this place with this woman, these people. Everything has to be arranged in such and such a way. And if some big, complicated arrangement is there, then my sense gratification proceeds nicely. So my happiness is conditional on so many things. One thing happens wrong. My son gets kicked out of school. So there's a tremor on the stock market. My wife meets somebody, a more attractive man. There's so many things are there. Some burglar comes to my house. There's so many threats. I'm piled up to insurance up to here for everything. But still, and that insurance is another burden. Doesn't it? She just creates more anxiety, more anxiety, more anxiety. So all my happiness depends on all this intricate set of circumstances. So I have to scrabble like a madman just to keep it all together. Something can go wrong here, something can go wrong there, something can go wrong here. So I'm full of anxiety. In order to secure my happiness, what happens? I'm full of anxiety. For me, there's either nervousness or death. But in spiritual happiness, this is one is not disturbed even in the midst of greatest difficulty, because the happiness does not depend upon material circumstances. So even when your body's being taken out from under you, there's no disturbance in one's happiness, because it does not depend upon material arrangement. So that happiness is there. And that's what any intelligent person should aim at. So these people are looking for happiness on the bodily platform or in a state of illusion. So we should be alert not to get seduced into thinking. That there's anything there here in the material world for us. Okay, I'll stop there. These sons and grandsons, next one, you find out what they did to him, Jex 9. Of these many sons, each produce hundreds and hundreds of grandsons. In this way, the whole city of Panchala became overcrowded by these sons and grandsons of King Paranjana. So then we'll see what they did to him. Questions or comments? Yeah.
Thank you.
It's harder than if you're a brahmachari. Or if you can't stay in that state, what are you going to do? So the main thing is that if one becomes a householder, according to the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness, and follows them rigidly, just as rigidly, householder life is not a license to disobey the order of the spiritual master. That is not that getting up for Mangal Arati is an obligation of brahmacharis, but not householders, for example. So householders who follow the regular principles of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada described this in Bhagavad Gita, they're considered brahmachari grihasthas because the process of bhakti yoga is so powerful, and very soon they come to the same position of having this